Blog Talk Radio.
This is DJ Sanano Gordy. You know what that means, right?
Put the needle on the record.
That's right. When Taino Radio's in town, we're going to have a fun time. That's right. Once again, thank you all for tuning in wherever you live throughout the world. We know where you are. Why? Because I get the stats every single day. And I just can't believe since day one, like in 2019, we have Russia with us. Can you believe that? There's some Tainos out there in Russia. Or there's Russians really interested in Taino culture. It makes sense, right? That's right. Then we got Japan, man. Japan, India, Australia. That's right. New Zealand, Maori people, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Then we got India. That's right. India, the original Indians. That's right. There you go, man. That's right. We all know Columbus got it wrong. And then we got, okay, I got a special announcement to make. Finland is in fourth place in listeners. That's right. The Finnish people. Can you believe it? Finland. So check this out. Mexico's been with us. Borinquen, Jamaica, Quisqueya. That's right. We're still waiting for Cuba, but I understand some issues in Cuba, what's going on there for a while now. But I know in their hearts they're with us. That reminds me, wow, Natalie Uber Rodriguez cannot be with us today. She is under the weather and her throat is gone, so she can't even talk. And she tried, though. She tried to come up. So because I posted the show all over the world, guess what? The show must go on. But next week, we'll do a part two of the Indigenous Caribbean Study Hour. And we'll talk about part two of what we're going to talk about today, and that is the Taino culture, Taino-inspired representations, okay, in contemporary society all over the world, you name it. So this is going to be a great show because, that's right, we have a fellow tribal cousin with me today, and she is willing to do this, okay? Willing to do this on the spot. Willing to do this to sit with us, sit with me tonight, and talk about all things Taino inspire representations. And her name is Stephanie Agosha Hagwad Okoshi. Are you there?
I am. Hello, Sanakori.
Hey, man. What's up? Thank you for being with us, man. This is great. How are you feeling?
Yeah, glad to be here. I'm good. Like, I had just a little bit of chance to look up some cool stuff, but there is some cool Taino representation out there, which is neat to see.
I knew it. But you know what? Before we get into it, I got to get a theme song for you. You know, all the hostesses and hosts, you know, they always have these theme songs. So I'm trying to figure out, what can be one for you. Let me see. I'm going through my crates, see what vinyl record I'm coming out. All right, you know what? Let me introduce this again, right? This is just an interim song, okay? So I can figure out what's a good song for you, okay? So
okay.
let me start it again. Co-hostess on the last minute Indigenous Caribbean Study Hour from the mountains of Nahuatl, excuse me, from the mountains of Arayeke, Yucayac, and that's Stephanie Okosha Hawan Okoshi.
There you go.
There you go. It matches your name. I kind of like that. Okosha Hawan Okoshi. How about that? Oh, man. This is out of control already. But, man, thank you for being here. Yeah, man. So, yeah, so today's topic, we're going to carry this to part two next week, and I'll invite you too to sit with Natalie, talk about contemporary Taino-inspired representation. It actually was her idea to talk about this. Wow. We've been around since Taino culture, 900-1000 Common Era, right? Now, 1492, unfortunately, kind of stopped the flow a little bit, you know, because of some priests that came our way. You know, we try to correct them, but we tried. And then an evolution took place, right? Another evolution. So we changed somewhat, right? The culture changed.
Mm-hmm.
It changed drastically. I mean, the dress code changed. I know the Spaniards, the invaders, they gave us a dress code, you know. And then they gave us, we couldn't bathe 3 times a day on the minimum, which was kind of long, right? So we had to change that flow. But I guess when they weren't looking, we were in the rivers, right? When they weren't looking. So, damn, I'm trying to think of, and then, you know, some other cultures came to the mix. And, hey, hospitality, right? Say, come on in. Africano, gente, come on, we got you, right? Then all these different places came and so on and so on. And here we are, 21st century, and Taino is still, that word is still active. I know that some people don't like the word, but guess what? Sexy. It's a sexy word. Taino, man. La buena gente, right? The good, the noble people, man. What's up with that? So with that comes a lot of representations. Get to get a lot of representations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? What do you think, Stephanie? If I say contemporary Taino inspired representation, what does that sound like to you? What does that look like?
I think it's probably like a lot of the stuff we're doing in Arayeke, and the kind of I've seen with a lot of you know, Taínos, Puerto Ricans from like diaspora, you know, having. I went to a Puerto Rican restaurant here in North Carolina. And they had atabe and the sun glyph and all of that, you know, still rocking with that. But,
wow.
Yeah, for yeah.
Wait, is it atabe, like, where again? Somewhere in North Carolina?
It was at a Latin Puerto Rican restaurant here in North Carolina that had a lot of the Taino glyphs, like the birds and all that, decorating the restaurant, painted on the walls. Yeah.
You see, that's a great example of how, you know, these images, indigenous images, are right here in contemporary times. And you know what, Stephanie, correct me if I'm wrong. I read this in history many times. They say when a culture is extinct, right, when a culture is no longer existing, as they say, right, names, traditions, it disappears. And usually the invaders that come and kind of intentionally make people disappear, they put their words in it, you know. So if a river was called Tanama, then they call it St. James, I don't know, San Haman, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they change the words on the map. But it's ironic, maybe not, 80 to 85% of our rivers in the Caribbean are indigenous names. The town.
Yeah, and a lot
majority
of the provinces and stuff in Puerto Rico, right? Like, there's a lot of them named after, like, Taino chieftains and stuff.
Well, what does that tell you? Is it, I mean, normally an extinct culture doesn't have those things going on, right? What does that tell you?
Yeah. And so, like, I think with the getting into the representation of Tainos, I think you also have to look at, like, misrepresentation. You know, like, us cracking up textbooks, you know, elementary kids told us that we were extinct and all of that. But all the practices and stuff are, you know, still there. You know, my grandma grew up in the mountains of Puerto Rico, has extensive, you know, herb knowledge about the land. And that's still very much, you know, practiced. And, you know, you talk about, too, like, modern things, even not necessarily representative Taino individuals, but cultures, you know, everyone goes on about how good the Cuban cigars are, you know?
Mm.
And we have that for, you know, tobacco.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad you mentioned tobacco. When I was a child, my great-grandmother raised me. He was a cigar maker in Puerto Rico. I mean, they were both farmers at the time. Cigar maker, and that's how he made his living here as an older man.
When he moved here.
Yeah, to raise the grandchildren. He made cigars, and I could remember that smell, man, you know, that cigar smoke, him making it, and that smell, you never forget. So whenever I smell it, I think of him, you know, and it's, but this is a Taino practice, making cigars. That's thousands of years. Came up the migration, you know, so wow, man.
Yeah. And right? People, like, you know, regularly say Taino words and participate in stuff that comes from our culture and stuff that, you know, that they first came across, saying words, you know, even like hurricane and iguana and stuff like that. Or even like El Coqui, you know, like you see that referenced a lot in Puerto Rico, and even with the superhero named El Coqui, you know, it's coming back.
Check this out. Now that you mentioned Coqui, I was reading up on it because I don't have my copy. Copy number one. I guess it came out already. Hold on. What? Yay. I read this article dated back in April. It was written by Ivan Blatta, illustrated by Mateo Illuminati, with letters by Carlos N. Mangual. Coqui number one. I have to get it. And kind of cool what they said here. Let me see. Coqui is a new superhero. Axel Alvarado was looking forward to a new stage in his life with his fiancée, Carmen, until a fatal accident changed his life forever. Evil is brewing in Puerto Rico. Well, that's the case. That's true. And something is about to unleash on the island. And Axel decides to use his newfound powers against a new terrifying menace as Puerto Rico's brand new superhero, Coqui. Wow, it's 40 pages. I gotta get that, man. That's cool.
Yeah, I remember hearing a lot of coverage on it for years, but it's cool to hear it's, like, you know, finally out.
Introducing the courageous, the origin story of Coqui. Kind of cool. He has like a purple suit on or something. He has some kind of goggles or something.
Yeah,
but
he has a kind of frog-like look to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, his hands and feet have the Coqui. Yo, Coquis are something else, man. They can stick to that wall like Spider-Man. So I guess he has those powers, I'm assuming.
Probably stick on the Spider Hurricane, huh?
Yeah, right. But it's funny, on the comic it says the Mystic Mountains of El Yunque. Wow, part one. See, that's amazing, man. See a lot of these old references, you know, El Yunque, the sacred mountain of the Taino, of our ancestors and us too, right? The sacred mountain, El Yunque. Yunque, the white mountain. So, you know, if it wasn't for that Yunque mountain, hurricanes will destroy the island in a minute. But mountain, yeah, it would decimate the whole island. It would flood it, forget it. But the Yunque cuts it in half. So whenever a hurricane
comes.
And
I guess they come from the east too, right? And Yunque supports the east side, right?
Yep, exactly. And it cuts it in half. So it,
wow.
So it kind of breaks down the velocity of the hurricane. Imagine if it was, like, not there. Oof, we'll be in trouble. So, man. So, for the Coqui, it's definitely in Borinquen. It's definitely a big one. is a big representation. You see it all over the place, right? You can't go anywhere without seeing a coqui.
Yeah, my cousin has a coqui like tattooed on him, and my grandmother, we end up getting her like a CD of just like coquis singing for her to go to sleep to. So even when she left Puerto Rico, she still would play that and fall asleep to the coquis.
Oh man! And speaking of coqui. Hey, let me, do you have a question for the coquis? Do you have a question?
Not off the top of my head.
Well, let me ask you a question. Coquis.
Okay.
Whoever wants to answer first, how does it feel that so many of your Homo sapien Taino people love you so much? What do you think about that? Wow. Sounds like they're happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, due to the pollution on the island, a lot of, you know, these companies come down trying to pollute it. There's been some issues of you know, coquis. The population is kind of dwindling down. Coquis, what can we do to help? You're upset. You're upset. What do you think, Stephanie? That's
yeah,
a true story.
It's sad about the coquille, you know, going away. I know amphibians are always like kind of, they can often be hit the hardest or the first, you know, with pollutants and stuff in the water and all that, you know, to come out kind of misformed and stuff like that.
That's true. I got one question, you know. They said the coqui exists in Hawaii. How do you guys ended up in Hawaii? Because I know you can't live anywhere else. You're right. You're absolutely correct. Did you understand what they said? They said, wherever the Boricua goes, we're going to go. You know, the turn of the century, right, when those Boricua farmers went to Hawaii. I don't know if they brought them over or the coqui just jumped on the luggages, the maletas, you know, but they showed up in Hawaii. Now they're invasive species there.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you move animals from different places, right? Like they're having a hard time in Puerto Rico, but then they took off in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. And they can't live anywhere else. They've done tests like in DR and Cuba. And it's like they can't live anywhere else, but they managed to live in Hawaii. So there you go, man. It's, the coquille is something else. Do you have any final words to tell us, any inspirational words to tell us, the Taino people? That's true. That's amazing. Listen, man, we gotta what do you call it? We gotta be inspired by these coquilles, man. They're the best. So what do you think? What's going on with you said about your neighborhood that you saw this representation of Atabe, which is amazing. Was that a restaurant again?
It's a restaurant, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool,
they had
man.
It like big on the walls. They had like maybe half a dozen different of like the well known like Taino glyphs painted up on
it. Nice. You know where I live, there's a restaurant called El Nuevo Taino. It's a restaurant that sells everything, you name it, Caribbean food, hamburgers, french fries, you name it. And it says El Nuevo Taino, and it has the picture of a chief, like in a headdress. So I'm like, wow, look at that, man.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so.
It seems to be more like, go ahead, yeah.
No, I spoke to him about it, like what inspired him. He says, oh, la cultura, la tradición. Yeah. So I told him I was Taino. I bring my friends, and they're like, yeah, please. Yeah. It was fun. They were Dominican owners.
I get a sense that there's like a revival of acknowledging like our Taino like culture and heritage popping around the Caribbean. I saw there's an actor, I believe they're from the Zazam of India Moore. They're Dominican and Puerto Rican, I believe, and a friend shared with me, they got a whole back tattoo, and it had, I think, the Taino Sunglip and Atave. They're a famous actor. I think they're on the show Pose. But so that's, you know, out there. They're fans, you know, whether they are indigenous or not, you know, there's that pride that's getting sent out there into the world of Taino, what's important to the Taino people.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, we were highly complex society back in the day before the invaders show up. And it seems like they have a really good organizational skills. And it's kind of sad because now in the islands, well, just put it like this. And you look at a lot of these mayors, you look at a lot of these governors through the years. It seems like they don't have the Taino in the centerpiece. You know, it's always like you have to struggle. You know, the local activists, the groups have to struggle to convince the politicians that, hey, this is important. I mean, they gave some funding for some of the museums and stuff, but I'm telling you, it's just like you're pulling teeth when it comes to government. So it's so sad, right?
If there's not, you know, incentive for stuff like tourism with it, even though there is stuff for Taino tourism, I'm sure they want to spend it more on, you know, other things that they can probably make money and bring people to the island.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, most of the times you see Taino stuff on the mainstream level is like, you know, tourism and stuff. You know, sometimes I get upset. I'll be honest. When I go to, like, mainstream Puerto Rico, you go to San Juan, you know, when a lot of these hotels or restaurants, they highlight certain music, you know, I notice they're very shy when it comes to Taino influences. You know, they highlight the Hispanic aspect, the Spanish, or the African. But when it comes to Taínos, they're very shy about that. It's like, it's still like a taboo. Do you notice that sometimes? Like, it's like a taboo.
Yeah, I think people feel uncomfortable sometimes about it. Like, my grandmother, you know, didn't identify as indigenous or anything, but she did so many things, and she would point with her lips and all of that. But, you know, I think a lot of people kind of, you know, there was that the census where they stopped identifying as Taino, and maybe generations tried to hide their ethnicity from their children just so they would be more better assimilated. Because that was kind of like the Spaniards did terrible things and had their whole caste system, but they also like encouraged mixing with, of course, like the African being at the lowest in their minds, and indigenous not far up. Yeah.
Well, for a while, right? The property, slavery, slaves. Okay. You know, sometimes we talk about this in the, most times it's in the indigenous powwow. You know, I guess our people experienced the first sex trafficking industry, the Spaniards, the Portuguese, selling the women
as slaves. Yeah, because they brought young women and girls even to Europe, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it was all for one thing, right? For pleasure and procreation, you know, it's just, I can't imagine going to a time capsule, going back to that time period. What do you think? Like, wow, you would have been like in shock. Stuff that went down.
Yeah, like, I think we know it's horrible, but, well, of course it is horrible, but I think it would be, totally different. Because you'd see, you know, a lot of the living, breathing Taino culture, but you'd also see the horrors that, you know, as much as you could describe them, I'm sure seeing them doesn't do, like, the description. The descriptions don't do the horrors justice, I suppose.
It's true. Well, let's review something here. Now you're from Borinquen, right? For what town, again, for the listeners to hear?
My family's from Yelko, up in the mountains, where the coffee is. Yeah.
That's right. It's beautiful. My people from Yelko, too. Grandparents from Yelko. My maternal grandfather's from Yelko, but so we're family, man. You know, that's cool. But so think about this now. When you go to Puerto Rico, or when you with Puerto Ricans or Boricuas, Dominicans, or Caribeños in general, what stands out to you that not Spanish, not African, but what can you see that we can say Taino? Let's do some research here in contemporary times.
In terms of the personality or in terms of other things?
Just things that we can visibly notice. Your gestures, personality, everything.
Yeah, like, you know, so the girl would point with her lips and make a little kind of nod up when she was pointing to something. A lot of people that I've come across, you know, Jamaican, Cuban, all that, can be very, like, shy initially, but very loyal, very curious, and just can be very, very goofy, really goofy and silly. My grandma just, like, pulled faces and stuff like that. She wouldn't do it around other people, but, yeah, she was just very silly, playful.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I work in East Harlem, and in most of you, there's still a lot of Puerto Ricans, and they call it the el barrio, you know? And it's funny. You don't have to, when you meet people in the street, you don't have to say anything. You just point with your lips, you know, or through your mask, like to say hello. Well, if you want something, you tuck your lips, you point at something, right? If you want to say hello, you point up, right? Like you point up.
Oh, like a step kind of, yeah.
As much as your neck can go, right? Like you can bend. and that's like a hello. You don't have to say hello, just with the neck, right? Let's see, what else? Oh, you know, I researched, too, that the handshake was a Taino gesture, the tenta handshake.
Oh, really?
And I know that we're big into handshakes, like, you know, different handshakes and stuff.
Did Europeans, that, like, do that, or they get that from us? Like, I wonder what the history of the handshake is now.
Yeah, but we handshake. I know in indigenous people up in the north, when they do a handshake, they instead of holding your hand, they hold your forearm to forearm. You grab it. You know, that's how indigenous do it up here. Yeah, but definitely the pointing. The pointing is like without words. That's definitely, we catch that right here in all the islands, right?
That's interesting that people even in New York and younger generations still do that, even if they've been separated from the islands or, you know, knowledge of their Taino-ness. That it still persists.
Yep. And how about sounds? Did you ever hear that from your grandparents? They always make a sound. Like,
my grandma would always kind of like, she would kind of like fidget, like sniffing through her nose. Hard to fully describing it, but yeah, there'd always be like little ticks, I suppose.
Right. I find that a lot compared to other cultures, the Caribbean, like you know, like all these like sounds, you know, like what they call that, body language, right?
Yeah. Gestures and all that.
Yeah. So, also, I know these historians, they always spoke about our people as being very hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get that in the Caribbean a lot, right? What do you think about the hospitality?
And always want to make sure, like, offering food and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And another thing that comes across my mind in terms of representation, quote-unquote representation, is, you know, a lot of us like Malta.
Yep.
You know, some prefer, you know, Polar, Iberia, but there's also, you know, the Hathwe, and it has, you know, the image of him on there. And that's, you know, commonly in grocery stores.
That's a Taino representation, yep. I know in the stores where I live, they have the it's predominantly Dominican neighborhood, and they have the Taino Mari beer, but it's not fermented.
Oh.
It's not fermented, but they call it craft drink, you know, the Mari. And that was
cool. I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, that was our drink. It was two major drinks, two major beers that our people drank, and it was one was Mari, and the other one was it was a yuca beverage. Yuca, out of yuca, but we lost that recipe. And I believe that's the one that got people intoxicated on the arritos, with that yuca.
Mm. I mean, it has lots of starch. I'm guessing that would do well for the fermentation process, maybe? I don't know.
Exactly. In South America, they call it a chicha. A chicha, which...
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Also,
it's interesting seeing a lot of... Go ahead.
No, yeah, tell me.
Oh, it's just interesting seeing stuff that's like Taino, but also like Taino adjacent. Like you get other names and words and places, you know, similar like with the Mayans, like you can tell that we have a shared legacy and language and that, you know?
Oh, man.
A lot of similar words and concepts and things. So, you know, when people see some of that, it's where, you know, we once kind of like were around those areas and got stuff from, and, you know, Central South America too.
Well, we had a show not too long back. We're talking about food. We had special guest Jennifer was on here, Jennifer Castro, another member of Arayike. But we're talking about highlighting the avocado, el aguacate.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't indigenous to the island. It came from the Mayans. And to this day, right? To this day, you got to have an aguacate with your meal, right?
Yeah, my grandma always has them. And I remember I read about bacalao. And when I mentioned to my grandmother, she had never made it for her kids or anything. Like, my uncle was surprised that she had made it. But I was like, Grandma, can you make bacalao? And she was like, yeah. So I took her to the bodega and, you know, and how she served it. Of course, there was some avocado there.
Oh, man, that's the best part.
Yeah. And she would taught me how to, like, grow them, too. You know, like, I think it was, like, you know, putting the toothpicks and putting them in a glass of water to propagate them.
Well, you got the peppers, you know, the ajis, ajíes, which are very spicy. It's one sweet, one spicy. And that's still seen in those supermercados, ¿verdad? In the supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the
yuca.
And
we think of Italian food as having tomato, but we get that from the Americas. Yuca, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Yuca is huge, man. It's huge. Yeah, still. Or cassava bread. The cassava. It's huge in these supermarkets still. And you know what's cool? I want to see if I put a photo in Taino Radio Facebook page and TainoRadio.com. They have these cool cassava breads now that has on the package, it has a picture of a chief. A Taino.
Oh, cacique. Really?
Yeah, that was cool. That's kind of new, so.
I wonder if they had a certain cacique in Mayan.
Mayan?
Oh, I said, I wonder if they had a particular cacique in mind from, you know, like, you know, there's the Mapahatwe.
I wonder if they
also modeled theirs off a specific one or just like a general.
That's a very good question. I'm trying to think of the name. I can't think of it offhand. Guamanama. I think that's what they call it on the package. Let's see if I post it on an image of it, and I'll post it. And, you know, when I used to do the presentations in the schools a lot, the kids, a lot of schools I went to were Dominican, Puerto Rican, Cuban, some Cuban, not much, Jamaican, Haitian, right? And I'm telling you, the icebreaker I used to use was, hey, who's indigenous here? You know, you got no hand raised. You know what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Who's Indian here? You know, no one. You know, like, no the kids, you know. They say, who's Puerto Rican? Hey, who's Dominican?
Yeah.
Hey. You know, everybody cheers. And then sometimes you get the Mexican kids, you know, and you get the Haitian kids, you know, I include them. And then it says, who eats indigenous food? They're looking at me like, what the hell is he? And he's like, elementary school level kids. And I'm like, all right, no one eats indigenous foods? So I guess you're not Indian then, right? And they look at me like, what? And I said, all right, here we go. Let's take a quiz. Who eats yuca? Oh, man, all the hands go up. You know? Who eats patata?
I actually didn't know until recently, like, how connected we are to it. You know, it's not just ingredients or, you know, tobacco, but I want to say it was asapao.
The who?
I think it might have been that one, but there was a certain Puerto Rican dish, and I looked it up, and it was just straight up indigenous. Like, my grandma, it wasn't, like, you know, mixed with all these elements. Is it asapao, or maybe I think of something else?
Oh, asapao. Yeah, asapao, yo. No, even the word itself,
and,
right? Asapao.
Yeah, and I was surprised, you know, because we'd have, you know, international influences as well as the history of Spanish and various African cultures, but mixed into a lot of our cooking and culture and all of this. But I was just super surprised to see, like, stuff my grandma made was just straight up, like, an indigenous dish, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, the season.
So it's not like distant. It's alive and well. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but you know, the seasoning is definitely base of all these foods is definitely, you know, the stuff we cook, you know.
Achote.
Yeah, the achote, which was what do you call it? The insect repellent. That's why they call it Redskins, you know. So we had the repellent. Oh man, so. But oh yeah, so whenever I have Mexican kids, I'll say who loves aguacate, you know, all the hands go up, and I say who's Mexican here, and they raise their hand. Let's thank them. They brought aguacate to us, the great Mayan people, you know. So you know, I think
that's cool to draw that connection to their pride and their heritage, you know, because
yeah.
You probably lighten some little light bulbs in their heads too if they weren't aware of, you know, some of the stuff.
Well, that's why I always use food. I always use food as the key, you know. That's very, very important, the food. Because we eat it. We consume it every day, right?
When I travel to other places, like, I look up, like, what's the food there like? You know, I will plan, like, you know, the itinerary and everything, but I'm like, what's good
mm-hmm.
there? I want to eat it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, all the root vegetables, the squash, that's all our food, you know. That's our food. And
yeah.
Yeah. You say, you know. And it's funny, if you cook your food with the añato or the lija, the mosquitoes are not going to bite you because that's the repellent. You have it in your food.
Oh, does it get into you kind of like, you know, when you eat a lot of garlic, you know, the garlic
sticks
around?
Yeah, it gets in your skin. Yeah, it gets in your skin, so they don't like that. Oh, how about the sofrito? The sofrito,
the spices,
right? That's straight up Taino. El pastele, how about that one? Pastele, a lot of people don't think that's indigenous. But
mm-hmm.
pastele is straight up like a tamale, you know? Same style.
Yeah, because I think they got the banana leaf when enslaved people from Africa and stuff came over, you know, and that's how we get the,
exactly.
you know, platanos and stuff like that. But in West Africa, you know, they wrap a lot of the food in some places like that. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, I guess they changed out the corn husk for some nice banana leaves.
There you go, yep. I'm trying to think of, well, you know, the pepper pot that they use in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
that's straight up Taino. Because why? Bartolomé de las Casas, when he was doing his studies, wherever they went, whatever Yucayeque they went, they always had these huge clay pots cooking every day, all day. We didn't have three meals a day. When you were hungry, you ate from that pot. And that was like the sancocho.
Mm-hmm. That kind of reminds me, I think, of some of the creation stories, like the food was available for kids, you know, even if the adults are doing their things, the kids always
mm-hmm.
had like a safe home base and food, I think.
Oh, man, no one went hungry, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you know what I learned after Hurricane Maria? I got to visit the Nahuatl territory, which was an indigenous community in Puerto Rico, and I asked the people, you know, who were dependent on the government and stuff. I said, wow, what carried you? Because the coming didn't come like 2 months later, giving, you know, food. Like, what carried
mm-hmm.
you guys to survive? And I went to a mountainous area, and they were storing yuca for months.
Yeah.
Yuca.
I think I read somewhere that it can store for over a year.
Exactly.
Maybe like a whole year of, you know, bad harvest and stuff, you know, the yuca, you might not have all the other tasty stuff, but the yuca is
mm-hmm.
your staple. It's, you know, your godsend.
And there you go. So I'm just like, wow. Oh, also the asopao, it has the seafood, the mussels, scallops,
the
crabs, octopus. That's all straight up. That was our diet, man. That was our source of protein.
Seafood, tropical fruits, and what is it? I think guanabana. That's a Taino word, isn't it?
Guanabana. Man, that was...
You can get that. I got that in Thailand. You can get that around the world now.
Yo, it's the number one anti-cancer fruit ingredient.
Nice.
It's high potency of antioxidants. You can't go wrong with it. With that fruit. That was Harvard University, Harvard Medical Review said that the most potent fruit of antioxidants is the guanabana. So I love that.
And thinking of, yeah, And I'm thinking, like, a little off topic of the food, like, one thing that I see everywhere that people utilize that's very well Taino and part of Taino culture and history is hammocks, you know? When you got some music set up or you go traveling to, you know, beaches in Asia or wherever you go, you know, there's hammocks. It's relaxing. It keeps you cool, keeps you away from the bugs, you know.
Exactly, man. And the thing about the hammocks, it kept you off the floor so those insects won't bother you, right?
Yeah, and I read years ago, I'm not sure if it's true or not, that I think like pirates and stuff, you know, people on the ships would use hammocks because, you know, when the ship was swaying, they'd, you know, kind of stay fairly stable with the gravity, wouldn't be rolling around as much.
Exactly, exactly. But, it's, but you know, the indigenous peoples of South America, Caribbean, you know, we had it down pat. It's kind of sad
that
a lot of the weaving techniques was kind of lost because of the organic materials. Some did survive, but I can imagine.
I found some journals that actually like had some preserved ones and had the patterns in it. It's some academic journals, and there's the there's other places, including I believe in South America, there's that long woven thing. It begins with an M that they would use to squeeze the yuca.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I always forget that
Oh, I cannot think of it, but yeah.
And you know, the Guarifuna still use that big time. The Guarifuna people use that.
I got to hang out with them in Honduras, actually.
Oh, where?
Yeah. So, like, the Guarifuna are predominantly, let's see, they're mixed with, like, African. They're mostly African and mixed with indigenous as well. And when I met them, they're, like, on, I met them on the islands of Honduras, Cayos Cochinos, and little islands off of that. And what was interesting is they were used to pass the bottle, and they had some distilled alcohol. And it was medicinal and for drinking. And I asked them what was in it, and they said, you know, like, mango and garlic and all these different herbs, right? Mm-hmm. And I smelled it. And it smelled just like the tinctures, or had the same things that the tinctures that my grandma would make. She would put it in the bottle to keep underneath the sink. And that really surprised me. You know, there might be some African influences in there too, and a lot of the, I think, you know, indigenous plants that they knew. My grandma, we would just be walking. You know, sometimes I wonder if my grandma's eyesight was good as she's getting older, but she's like, Stephanie, you see that plant over there? You can eat the roots. And I look at it, and I'm like, that's elephant ear. And I look up elephant ear, and the genus is taro, which people can eat. She would just be able to see things like, oh, that's good for an eye wash. She just had all this different knowledge of plants that survived thousands of years. And you can see across, I think, the Caribbean and, you know, similar things across Latin America as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the word you want to use is sibuca. Sibuca.
Sibuca?
The strainer for the yuca root, when you strain the poison out of it. The bitter
root. I would love
to
learn how to weave from some of those groups that still make those things, you know, and what other stuff they make. That'd be really cool if we could, you know, do almost like trips and stuff and, you know, go and study and learn from, you know, our cousins in the mainland.
No, that's very, very important. Let me see, there's a lot of... I'm trying to think now. Wow, there's so much. The guatu, you know, a lot of people still use guatu for campfire, and that means fire.
That's the word for fire, guatu?
Yeah.
Oh, so people say they want to have a fire, like, today in, like, Borinquen, supposed to use Spanish, so they'll use that word?
Yeah, like a bonfire, to say guatu, vamos a un guatu, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. And another thing I thought about, too, is, you know how people stretch their ears and stuff these days?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff, you come across indigenous peoples in the Americas, and the Taino did that as well.
Definitely. I mean, you see it in the semis, the wooden semis. You see them have the earplugs.
With an old guanine or whatever in the ear. Yeah, so I don't know if other cultures do that around the world, but I know the indigenous peoples... various peoples in the Americas and South America and stuff and the Caribbean, you know, did it. So I'm wondering if, you know, it came from that you see in this kind of modern trend.
or for crabs, they say huellas. In Taino, it's huellas.
Huellas.
You say huellas in Taino, the crabs. So the language, see, the language, the modern language that we either we think it's modern or Spanish, it's actually Taino.
I mean, like, even the word barbecue from barbacoa, which was, you know, the structures they had to smoke the fish and the iguana and all of that. And Japan has their own word, you know, for, you know, barbecue, but you can also see barbecue, like, spelled in the Japanese way. So many places around the world know the word barbecue, and that comes from, unfortunately, us being messed with the first by Europeans, but our culture is out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's... I'm telling you, man, there's so many words we can think of. I know in Dominican Republic and all the Cuba, all these islands, we have a lot of Taino words constantly being used. Ching ching, you know, when you, a small serving or something. Ching ching, I'm a ching ching, you know.
I do wonder where all our nicknames come from in the Caribbean. Because it's in Jamaica, too, and I know we have, you know, African and indigenous influences and culture and heritage, but there's a lot of the names that people are given that aren't their real name, whether it's another name or, like, in my family, you know, there's a Piwi and a Weeby, and all these different other nicknames, Gigi, you know, and I have to wonder where that comes from and if it's Taino as well. And you probably see it in New York, too.
Yep, and you always have a papito, junito, you know, right?
Yeah.
Funny, man. It's true, the nicknames, right? And you know, when you say, mira, esa persona una buena gente, you know, that's, you know, when you say buena gente in plural, right? Oh, that's a good people. That's Taino, man. That's what Taino means, right? Yeah.
I looked up somewhere and... can't find, like, I looked up a list one time, you know, some, you know, common Taino words. I don't know if this is backed up, but one of them on the list was tiburón, for sure.
Oh, that's Taino, yeah.
So I looked up the etymology of it, and it entered Spanish, I think, for a quick Google search where I looked it up, in the 15th century.
Interesting.
So I don't know what the original word for Spanish was. And I know Spanish has a lot of, you know, Arabic words as well, but I thought that was pretty neat that some of those words actually end up maybe be replacing the Spanish ones.
I'm telling you, that's so important. Hold on a second. I'm trying to think of, oh boy. Oh, la pita, no joda la pita. That's the saying in you, like, stop messing around. No joda la pita. And pita is a Taino word, which is a knot. It's a certain knot. It's a certain knot that ties the woods together, like the
Oh.
Land. Yeah, and
so
if
you mess that figuratively or literally, you're getting in trouble.
Well, if you don't tie it correctly, you can lose your wood, and you can hurt someone, or even kill someone, and you bring the wood down the mountain. So you got to tighten up the pita. You got to tighten it up.
Oh.
The knot. So don't hold la pita. Don't mess with the knot, right?
And another thing that Puerto Ricans probably have heard of growing up is, you know, el cuco.
Ah, yeah, el cuco.
Like, I don't think that's a Spanish thing. I think it's Taino, you know. It's el cuco is, like, something that parents tell their kids, like, don't get too far or the cuco will get you. And they don't really, you know, describe what a cuco is. The kid's kind of, whatever's scary to the kid, I guess the kid imagines. So the kid doesn't mess around because of the cuco. So maybe in our little villages, you know, we would tell the kids, you know, at night or whatever, the woods, don't go too far. The cuco will get you, probably.
Yeah, let me tell you, man. That's the that's a contemporary saying that we still use or term, right? Like cuco, and that's been around for thousands of years.
And I know Puerto Ricans that don't identify with that, you know, or don't really consider it or, you know, mess with it, and you know they still tell the kids about el cuco.
And you know, I'm looking through my notes, and shark in Dominican Republic is. Cajaya.
That sounds like a very Taino word.
Yeah, right?
But now that I have a feel of it, like, there's a lot of ones that have it, like, a lot of things with gua in it.
Yeah, gua, yep. like possessive, mm-hmm. right? Possessive. So, oh, how about this one? I can only speak of Boricuas, Puerto Ricans, because that's my, you know, it's my experience mostly in homes. But I also find it in Dominican homes too. Okay, behind the front door or by the front door, there's a bat, a baseball bat or some kind of club. It's a la macana. La macana.
Oh.
And macana is the wooden club that was used in war.
Taino and the Caribs had their clubs, I think.
Yeah. Did you ever notice that in Puerto Rican homes? There's always a bat by the door. Like a wooden
bat. I'm trying to think. I don't think my grandma does. Her sister-in-law is Dominican. I go to her house a lot because they live like down the street from each other. I'm going to ask my cousin if his mom does it.
Yeah. If anyone listening has a baseball bat by their door or knows anyone, that's it, man. Let us know. Oh man, I tell you, man, it's all there, man. It's right in front of us, right? Here's another thing. Ready for this? Spiritual realm. A lot of people, older people, I should say, the older generation, they will have a bowl of water. And in that water, they will put the Virgin Mary, you know, a little statue of the Virgin Mary in the water with stones in the water.
Like a semi?
There you go. What? Atabe.
Goddess,
right?
Yeah, you see that a lot with Christianity. People hid their practices in Christianity, keep practicing it. Or, you know, the Christians kind of blended it into Christianity so they could get them into it. Mm-hmm. You would see in Japan where they had hidden Christians and they'd have like Buddhist mm-hmm. symbols, but secretly would be like the Virgin Mary and all that. Yeah.
The Virgin Mary. I'm telling you, man, when I first saw that, I was like, I almost passed out. So I'm like, what the hell? This is straight out of the creation story, you know? Like, and this is something they've been doing that my grandmother told me and her mother taught her. And then we'll put it in the water with the stones. Can you imagine that? And
wow,
there was one lady, she was a Dominican woman, she was in her 90s. Yeah, I used to do hospice care, so I visit a lot of homes. And she used to keep the Virgin Mary in a bowl of water with the stones, right? Little statue. And around the bowl was medications. She put all her medications. And I said, oh, so why you put your medicine around? Oh, para que lo bendiga, so she can bless my medicines. Get that energy from the water, you know. I'm like,
do you think
that Taino
people did that with their medicinal plants too? Like put them around like their semi or atabe?
There you go. You're on to it. Because water was sacred to us. Whenever we went by water, we would bathe in it. We would use it, you know, medicinally for water. Water is life, right? We were doing it back then. And,
yeah, I absolutely love water, and I only found out about the you know, bathing and ritual practices maybe in the last couple of months, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Now tell me, there's a remedy called they call it alcolado or alcoladito, and
it's
bay rum. From the,
that's what my grandma would have, that she put the herbs in that smelled like the drinking alcohol that I got from the Garifuna.
Check this out. The bay rum, those are berries
mm-hmm.
found in the Caribbean.
Oh,
you know,
really?
The bay rum berry. Yeah. The pimenta racemosa, the bay rum tree. And, you know, white flowers. And they will take that, those berries, they'll dry them up, and they'll put it in water to get that scent, that bay rum scent. And most likely they put it in the fermented water, the alcohol, and they use that for, what they call that? For healing purposes. And that's straight out of the creation story, Guabonito.
That's
first
super
medicine.
Cool. There's stuff that I think I've been doing, like that's just been Taino in my spiritual practices and daily life, and then like I come across it and like, oh my gosh, that's okay.
There you go, man. There you go. How about the teas? When people say when you're sick, oh, tomas té. Right? The teas.
Mm-hmm.
So straight out of our, we will boil the leaves, the seed, all that, right?
And, like, I don't think ginger is from the Americas. I could be wrong, but my grandma, being interested in medicine and stuff, she was big on making teas and showing me how to make it and brew it. And if I was sick, she would make me teas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's indigenous to China, you know. It's grown in India, but also it grows throughout the world, you know. So
yeah,
some good stuff. Ginger. I know they use it in their cuisines, you know, the Chinese, you know. But I'm telling you, man, all indigenous people have one thing in common. It's just, you know, whatever the plants are of that indigenous region, it's medicinal. They use it for medicinal reasons.
Yeah, people always talk about, like, how do people figure out what's poisonous or not? But I think probably the same with, like, hallucinogenic things, like mushrooms and such like that. They probably, like, watch the animals.
Exactly. Can I tell you something?
In tune with all that. Go for it.
It was our great-grandparents' generation, or my great-grandparents' generation. It's they will use a flower called a campana. You ever heard of that, campana?
Campana? Let me look it up.
It's like the...
Because my grandma and her brother had, like, all these plants growing in their backyard, and they would just put it around with, like, their machete. Even my grandma was, like, a little skinny thing, but she, she had some very toned muscles when working out in the garden every day.
Yeah.
La campana?
Yeah, la campana. It grows in the Caribbean.
Oh,
the campana flower.
Is it that's similar to like angel's?
That's it.
Devil, like the datura is a hallucinogenic plant, and I think that the pollen is really toxic.
Yeah. Well, kids.
I could be conflating it with another plant, though.
No, that's it. That's the one. But kids that were what we call ADHD back in the day, it was just monkey owls, or you know, it was just too hyper, or whatever. They didn't listen. They will give them a tea from that campana flower, just enough to take that energy away from them.
So I guess they had a way of brewing it that would be like a safe light sort of like sedative or something.
Exactly. They knew what kind of dosage to give, you know. Imagine that. That's something else.
And I think like even with the yucca's toxic in some ways if you don't prepare it right, isn't it?
You got to strain it. You got to use a strainer. So
yeah.
You got to strain it. If not, it kills you.
So,
it's the bitter one.
Which shows you it's a staple that they learned to, you know, have over phases of famine that survived for months in the humidity. They found this beautiful thing by, you know, knowing exactly how to use the plant, even though, like, if you just kind of ate it straight up, it wouldn't be good for you.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good at all. So, well, we got 90 seconds left in the show. Can you believe it? It felt like we just started, right?
Yeah, I hope. I look forward to tuning in next time and hearing Natalie. I hope she feels better soon.
Oh, word. You know what? We got to get a song for her. Let me get a song. Let's close the show with a song for Natalie that she can heal. And let me see. Let's see if what song we can use for her, right?
Yeah.
For all you listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. And Stephanie, you've been a great help. I can't believe it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, you made it. You did an awesome job. Hey, I got a good song. It's an Arawakan song from Guyana. I dedicate this song to Natalie, to her recovery. It's a great Arawak song. It's called I Alone Am a Monkey Baby. I alone am a monkey baby. Take care, Stephanie. Thanks a lot, man. Great show.
Ciao.
Huh? Oh, wait a minute. Someone wants to say goodbye. That's our special guest for today. Alright, so here we go. I alone am a monkey baby.
富士金世代は庭の富士一社富士金世代は庭の富士一社あそこよ金世富士代は庭の富士一社富士金世代は庭の富士一社そこよ金世富士金世代は庭の富士一社富士金世代は庭の富士一社あそこよ金世富士金世代は庭の富士一社富士金世富士金世代は庭の富士一社あそこよ金世富士金世代は庭の富士一社富士金世あそこよ金世富士金世